Luke 15 continued. Well, we've had the parable of the lost sheep and the parable of the lost coin. And I said that there was something unusual in these parables. The shepherd, for example, searches until he finds. He's not satisfied with 1% getting lost. And he brings the sheep that's lost back to his house, not to the sheepfold. He's so connected with this little sheepy. And now we're going to come to the parable of the prodigal son, of the lost son. And this is rather similar. There are things in it that aren't quite right, aren't quite true to normal experience. And they sort of flag up to us the point Jesus is making. A certain man had two sons. So he hasn't got many sons. People in those days had lots of children, but he's only got two. And the younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me." And he divided unto them his living. Well, what that means is that when your father dies, you inherit, you receive what was his. But in those days, the firstborn received more, and the law of Moses taught that. But here, this younger son says, "Give me that portion now." In other words, "I wish you were dead." That's a horrible thing to say. And he divided to them his living. In other words, he split it into half. Whereas normally, no, the younger son should not have got half of it. He should have got less. And the older, the firstborn, should have had more. That's what the law of Moses said. So we get the impression straight away of... That's right, he loved them both equally when it came to the inheritance. So we get the impression that the father is very, very kind and loving. Too much so, really. And the younger son is just awful. We straight away don't really like him. Not many days afterwards, the younger son gathered all together. It means that he turned it into cash. Now, especially in those days, if you sold things like property or land or whatever, animals, it was quite a long process. And if you want to sell something quickly, then you've got to reduce the price. So this, to make the price cheaper. So this son goes and sells his father's inheritance, what his family had received down the years and passed on to their children, and all that his father had worked for. He goes and turns his part of it into cash. Quick, quick, quick. And everyone would have shaken their heads. This was a village situation and everybody knew each other. And then he takes his journey into a far country, which we can assume is a Gentile country because they were Jews. And there he wasted the money with riotous living. And the older brother suggests what that was, hanging out with women and having lots of friends, giving his money away. And when he had spent all, so he's wasted his dear daddy's money, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country. This is a Gentile. And he sent him into his fields to feed pigs. Now, in the Middle East to this day, if you want to get rid of a beggar, because there's beggars everywhere, they don't tend to say, "No, I'm not giving you any money, go away." They ask the man to do, or the beggar, to do something that the person is not going to do. For example, "Oh, you want money? Well, lick my shoes." And the guy's going to say, "No, I'm not going to do that." "Okay, well, I won't give you any money." And I think that this man, this is a Gentile, non-Jewish country, he sees this poor Jewish guy who's lost all his money, who says, "Please, I'm starving, please give me some money." And he says, "Well, go and feed my pigs then." Because the Jews weren't supposed to go anywhere near pigs, and the Jews really didn't like pigs because they were unclean. And to this day, Jewish people really don't like pigs, and they don't eat pork. And I think that's what this man had said to him. And this young man was so desperate that he had to say, "Okay, fine, I will go and feed the pigs." And he would even have filled his tummy with the husks that the pigs were eating, and no one gave to him. All his friends he'd made by flashing his money around had suddenly disappeared. So he's absolutely desperate. He's had to turn away from keeping the law of Moses, and he's in a foreign country. When he came to himself, he said, "How many hired servants of my father's have got plenty of food and to spare? And I am dying with hunger." This is how hungry he was. "I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no more worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired servants.'" So he works out what he's going to say to his father. And as we'll see, he never actually gets around to saying it. "He arose and went to his father, but when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. So the father is, as it were, looking out of the window every day, hoping his son will come back. And this connects with the earlier two parables, how the shepherd searches for the sheep until he finds it. The woman sweeps her house until she finds her lost coin. So the father is hoping that this son will return. And you can imagine his joy. And in fact, all the son needed to do was to come back. The father doesn't interview him and say, "Look here, we've got to sort all this out. What did you do? Why did you waste all my money? Why did you disgrace us?" The fact the boy even just wants to come to the father is enough. And so, in those days, there was a big thing about shame, that if you left your home village and went away abroad to another country, if you came back, you're only supposed to come back if you came back rich and wealthy with presents for everybody. And it's the same in a lot of parts of Africa and the poorer world today. And one of the big things that would have stopped him going back was the sense of shame, because people would have been so angry with him. "Your dad was a really good man, and you took half of all that he had, and you went and wasted it, and now you've come back penniless without anything." And the father realizes that. And so, when he saw him a great way off, his father had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. So the father tries to save the younger son from that shame. He runs, and it wasn't the dumb thing for older men to run in public. And he accompanies the son back to the family house because he's wanting to save him from shame. And Paul talks about love in 1 Corinthians 13, and he says that love is the same, that true love always tries not to shame another person. So even if someone has done something wrong, you do not shame them. Love protects, Paul says. And that is what I think the father is doing here. And of course, the father here is God. The son said to the father, "I've sinned against heaven and in your eyes, and I'm no more worthy to be called your son." Now, he would have rehearsed what he was going to say because he had planned to go on to say, "Make me as one of your hired servants." But the father butts in, doesn't let him do that. The father says to the servants, "Bring forth the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet." He didn't even have shoes on his feet. "And bring here the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." And they began to be merry. It's a bit like baptism. You go under the water, that's like death with Jesus. You come up out of the water, that's like resurrection. You die and live again. "Now the older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. He said to him, 'Your brother has come, and your brother and your father has killed the fatted calf, because he's received him safe and sound.' And he was angry and would not go in." Now that is typical. People get angry when they see somebody else receiving grace. "So the father went out and begged him. But he replied and said to his father, 'I served you for many years. I never transgressed, I never broke at any time any of your commandments.' Well, I doubt that was true." That's what he said. "And yet you never gave me a calf that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this your son was come, he doesn't say my brother, he calls him your son. As soon as this your son has come, who's wasted your living, your money, with bad women, you have killed for him the fatted calf. And the father said to him, son, you are always with me, and all that I have is yours. He'd given the other half away to the younger son, so all the other half of what he had was to be given anyway to the older son. It was right that we should make merry and be glad, for this your brother was dead and is alive again. So he's trying to correct the older brother, who says, your son. Instead, he says, look, your brother was dead and he's alive. He was lost and is found. So we feel sorry for the father, that the father is such a nice old man. He's given all he has for his sons. And the story ends with the poor father actually still losing a son, because the story ends with the older son outside the family house. He doesn't want to go in. And so the choice is ours. Which son are you going to be? If you're going to be the older son who says, I didn't do anything wrong, well, you'll end up outside the family of God. You'll end up outside the father's fellowship. So the only other choice is, well, we are the younger son, who was not a very pleasant person. And that is what our sins make us. So it is God who we, as it were, feel sorry for. It is God who in the end loved both his sons, the hypocritical, the self-righteous, as well as the wicked son. And we feel sorry for God. It must be tragic being God. So much love wasted.